Hello and welcome to the latest episode of SG Voice Talks 2. Today we're talking to Leah Nicholson, Head of Sustainability at Singapore headquartered Terrascope. Welcome, Leah. First of all, I'd like to focus on the big picture and ask you, you know, what does Terrascope do and what problem are you solving?
Great to be chatting with you, Felicia. Thanks so much for having me on today. So starting with the big picture, our purpose as Terrascope is to keep the planet habitable for all. That means the most vulnerable people, the plants and the animals, so the things that make up our rich biodiversity. And today, the biggest threat to keeping the planet habitable is really the unchecked pace of global warming. So we're already 1.1 degrees Celsius above the pre-industrial era, and we're seeing the impacts this summer of heat waves. We're seeing flooding causing billions of dollars of losses and people perishing at that impacts. And so science shows that to avoid those worst damages, we've got to limit warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius, which means, according to science, we have less than 7 years to turn around the situation. In 7 years, we will have spent our carbon budget for that 1.5 limit. And so that's where really technology and Terrascope comes in. We have a lot of the technology and solutions that we already need to get to a 2030 halving of global emissions. And we as Terrascope look at empowering companies to deploy those organizations by understanding where their emissions are coming from and helping them to simulate their net zero pathway. So we provide a kind of decision useful carbon data to inform the strategic business decisions. I think it's really important to call out that we focus on supply chains because that's where most of a company's emissions lie. A company, for example, in the food and beverage kind of retail space could think, okay, my emissions, I'm going to look at my operational emissions from my vehicle fleet. So I'm going to do electric vehicles. I might look at working with my utility to buy renewable energy certificates or look at solar panels for my offices. But that's actually a very, very small fraction of the company's emissions. Some of our clients in that space, 95% of their emissions are coming from the supply chain. So actually that company should be looking at the upstream deforestation, use of fertilizer, and even kind of the farming practices that are producing the goods that they buy and then sell. So that means looking at procurement policies. Again, some of our clients are looking at training and smallholder grants upstream to help shift those farming practices, and even new research and development opportunities like shifting to more plant-based alternatives of products, synthetic alternatives to some commodities like palm oil that have driven deforestation. So I think we're really trying to tackle the this big mission by providing that focus on where companies should be taking action, which really sits in the supply chain.
Excellent. Thank you so much. One of the things that I think is challenging for a lot of companies is that it's one thing to talk about the big picture. It's another thing to understand, what is it they actually have to do? Now, we've talked a lot at SG Voice about the tracking of emissions and the interconnections between different parts of the supply chain, different sectors, different areas of life. But what does a company actually have to do?
The first place to start is once you understand where your emissions are coming from, the actions that you then take become much easier. Also, as kind of head of sustainability with Terrascope, I can speak with experience that it's about engaging your stakeholders that are responsible for those areas. And so, you know, when you kind of measure your scope one, scope two, scope three emissions, you understand your exposure, and then you start looking at what are the other alternatives. So we already talked about some of them, right? It's kind of the energy source. I mean, emissions come from the energy that we use, the way that we get around, how we build our infrastructure, the industrial, especially heavy industrial processes, and the food that we consume and grow. And so across those five sources of emissions, there's a lot of actually very cost-effective solutions. Some of the research shows that already solar and wind is much more cost-effective than fossil fuel alternatives. electric vehicles require much less operational maintenance. Even farming practices, kind of water efficiency is a no-brainer. You're saving money and you're having better farming practices. So companies really need to understand what is their baseline and set a target to reduce and have strong buy-in at the C-suite level from the board, and then have that cascade down to the operational team. So once you've pinpointed what your emissions, what's driving your emissions and where that's coming from, then who's the stakeholder in the company that you need to engage to change that? And what are their ideas about how best to decarbonize? So yeah, I really want to enforce that just there's a lot of solutions out there. There's a vast growing technology providers. I mean, we're in the space of transparency and carbon accounting. And we help kind of the decarbonization technology solution providers be able to show what emissions impact they can have if those technologies are adopted.
That's an incredibly exciting space to be in, because if I understand correctly, what you're talking about is that you provide an opportunity for companies trying to create and implement transformative solutions to actually engage with major corporations, or perhaps corporations who haven't yet accepted transition. You know, how would a company that wants to do that get across your radar?
So companies are coming to us as a carbon accounting platform and kind of this decarbonization future forward platform, because they're, first of all, their customers might be asking, what are your emissions? So with the new regulatory trend on scope 3, which is the emissions from across the supply chain, what that means is now companies like large enterprises, which are primarily who we are serving as clients, are being asked, what are your emissions? And if you're in kind of developing countries or some countries that have less regulatory trends and you haven't been having to disclose this, now your customers are asking for it. Investors are also asking for this information. So and even employees, we're seeing a lot of employee satisfaction coming out from knowing that they're working for a company with purpose. And so you kind of really setting up, looking at this not as a one-off thing, but integrating decarbonization at a fundamental business level into how you think about your future strategy. And this is not just a nice to have, a little kind of one-off thing. It's really going to, net zero means system transformation, and it means changing your goods and changing the energy systems. I think net zero still feels like a far off concept for many people, but actually it's already with us today. Anecdotally, we're seeing some clients losing their competitive advantage because they don't have this data readily available, or they're simply emitting more emissions per unit of good than an alternative that has maybe the same price and same quality. So we're moving from kind of a risk-based approach to actually, this is going to really position companies to excel in the net zero future that we have. I mean, 3/4 of the global economy is now committed to a net zero target. It's tremendous. We just need to bridge that gap and start that trajectory.
And I think it's worth just highlighting that there are sort of two major drivers of change. One of which is the desire of companies to do the right thing and be at the cutting edge. But as you mentioned, there are obviously drivers about risk management. Can you talk us through the risks that companies face if they don't engage?
Yes, absolutely. And engaging, I think, can take many forms. I think when we say engagement, we want to see that really comprehensive kind of measurement all the way through to setting a target and having a credible plan. We've already seen the risks. I mean, there's a lot of brand and reputational risk. If a company, this kind of greenwashing concept, so a company says they're doing something, but in that example, that I used earlier, if you're only doing an action that's a very, very small share of your emissions and you're celebrating it like it's, you know, putting you on the pathway, then people with expertise in this area will be able to see that there's a disconnect between what's being said and the reality of that. So there's huge branding and reputational risk. And we're seeing that in the carbon offsets market, where there's been kind of a shift to really cheap carbon credit purchases instead of deep and meaningful carbon reductions. That's kind of now changing a little bit. There's a risk to the cost of capital. So increasingly countries, kind of regulatory authorities like Singapore, we have a price on 1 ton of carbon for certain companies of $5 per ton. And they already know that by 2030, they want to increase that fivefold. And that's even globally a relatively low figure. I mean, the EU carbon market is trading at around 100 euro per ton of carbon, as high as that. So you have, when investors are looking at these trends, they're going to start factoring that into decision-making about what the cost of capital for the business should be. So we're seeing kind of investor risk. There is, there's a whole variety of ways. I think that the pricing of carbon, if you're not taking decisions today that factor in that trajectory and you're buying an asset that has a 10-year, 20-year life horizon, you're risking having stranded assets on your balance sheet that, I mean, if we're already seeing all of these devastating impacts at 1.1 degrees, imagine 1.5. And then imagine factoring those prices into the cost of carbon in a meaningful way. So you'll see really kind of price shifts over time, and you want to be ready for those trends. And that's exactly what in Terrascope we help to do, is we put numbers on those tons and help factor in across the supply chain so that companies are aware, at least be aware today of the decisions you're making. Whether you change your decision or not today, as long as you're aware of it and you start to disclose that in your annual reports or your board meetings or your investor. So that awareness is key. And then over time, kind of start factoring that into how you're spending capital and how you're communicating.
Now, one of the things I mentioned at the top of the program was that Terrascope had initially focused on the agri value chain. Is that correct? Can you talk me through sort of who your clients are and, you know, why they come to Terrascope?
Yes, absolutely. We focus on the food and agricultural value chain, which is actually the reason for kind of that in the global context is it's about a third of global emissions come from that value chain. And it's really at the kind of forefront. It's both a source of emissions as well as a potential solution. The ability of crops and trees to sequester carbon is very, very cost effective. And if done well through regenerative agricultural practices, can really help us to get on that 1.5 pathway. So the potential for the sector is really unique and also tremendous. And it also presents a lot of kind of breadth in the supply chain. So if we look at food and agricultural upstream, that goes to kind of the transportation, manufacturing, processing of goods. We're also talking about adjacent industries such as apparel, luxury goods that use leather. That leather came from livestock. There is oils in cosmetics. There's apparel that uses cotton. And there's forestry that goes into the building sector. So it's actually a tremendously kind of cross-cutting a value chain. It's quite specialized in the ability to kind of look at both the removals as well as the sources of emissions throughout that. So we really see value in working with clients in this space. Actually, Terrascope ourselves were incubated with Olam, which is a major kind of Fortune 500 food and agricultural commodity trader. And so we benefited from a data perspective in real depth in that industry. And that's allowed us to pivot into these adjacent areas. And we found it really targeting. It's coincided. Our specialization has coincided with regulatory shifts. There's new EU regulations around zero deforestation. So that's really targeting that industry. The Science-Based Targets Initiatives has a new target setting approach for emissions from this sector. So now companies have to actually separate out their emissions into energy and industry and food and agriculture, and then set a specific target for food and the forestry and food and ag, and be able to count removals. So it's getting more complicated, which means that there's really a space for tech-enabled solutions to have a big impact on there. And the industry itself is kind of being increasingly regulated, which means that there is a demand for more accurate information, kind of faster turnaround, more decision relevant uses, and a lot of consumer consumers caring about what they're eating and what they're buying from those products.
Now, Leah, one of the things you mentioned about being incubated within Olam is that it gave you access to an enormous amount of data. So I think one of the big questions is, if what you're doing for clients is providing decision useful data, what are the challenges around data and carbon accounting, and how do you go about how do companies go about solving them?
Yes, it's a very important question. Like, the reason for Terrascope really came about from doing repeated emissions measurement and getting kind of different numbers, having it really be a manual and time consuming process, very expensive. And so that kind of bore the value that we provide to clients. So there's starting with the accuracy and the comprehensiveness, the greenhouse gas kind of standard for accounting understands the trade-offs between comprehensiveness and accuracy. But with technology using AI and machine learning, we're able to give clients more accurate and more comprehensive data. And we do that by taking the business activities information from the company that might be kilograms of rice purchased or kind of business travel or all of the different units of what the company has been doing. And we kind of match that with much more granular emissions factor data, which enables companies to get to an answer much faster. The reason why we need AI and tech is because Scope 3 supply chains has thousands of lines of business data. We're targeting large enterprises, multinational companies across 60, 70 different geographies and many different types of activities. To do that manually will just take too long. Time is not a luxury we have anymore to get information in the hands of companies that need to make decisions today. And so using AI and tech, we get to that number much faster. We also have a kind of future forward. So the way to make it decision relevant is to take that data and be able to simulate, you know, what if I were to substitute how rice is processed from diesel to solar or biofuel? And then the company can really understand if this action were to be taken, considering the cost and other factors, what would the emissions impact be? And that's how a company does a credible plan to net zero. And sometimes this highlights actually cost savings. So in some of our clients, there's been opportunities to look at with benchmarking, for example, kind of the packaging of goods could be much more efficient with the plastic container, or even substituting to different materials, using lower emission, less emission intensive refrigerants for some that were also cheaper. So you can actually, where you have both a climate and a business case, that's a no-brainer to take right away. I would also say another benefit is just even mapping the supply chains of companies, that it's kind of been a bit of a black box, and we've seen the repercussions of that through COVID and the other supply chain disruptions. Mapping a company's supply chain is a necessary step for a greenhouse gas emissions inventory, and that's got tremendous kind of business payoff. So we're able to visualize, help the company understand, and go deep into its supply chain emissions and meet a lot of kind of the measuring faster, more accurate, much more data enabled, and consistency over time. So what if you do a whole bunch of actions and then next year you want to verify, how did I do against my target? Well, what if your carbon data person left, or your consultants have changed over? What were the assumptions made? So actually, to get that kind of consistency over time as well, a platform is really, really important. So we're able to do all of that, from the measurement to the target setting, simulation, and kind of provide that confidence for companies to really integrate decarbonization at a fundamental level.
That's brilliant. Thank you. Now, I do have a slightly more personal question, which is, I understand you came from a background as a negotiator for small island states. What brought you over to industry?
I do indeed. I have a public policy background. I'm originally from Antigua and Barbuda. I actually went, when I was a kid, to boarding school in the UK, in Dorset. So I come from a small island. One of my early memories was a Category 5 hurricane, going through that with the family. And so climate change has always been a very personal journey for me. I started off in the environmental space and did my undergraduate and graduate in that field. I then joined the government. I worked for a year at a nonprofit, a local nonprofit in Antigua, and joined the government, the Department of Environment. And that was where, in a small island, you have to do a bit of everything. So we were working on domestic legislation. We did the country's first, it's jargon, but it's nationally determined contribution, which is basically the national climate plan,
yep.
Which means measuring emissions, setting the exact same thing we've been talking about, but just at a national level. So I also worked for a number of years in West Africa, in Lagos, as a technical advisor for mayors that were developing climate action plans. So my goal, and then I worked for 2 years, as you rightly said, kind of chairing the Alliance of Small Island States, the block of 39 small islands that are really considered the moral voice in the UN that helped found the UN Climate Convention. During our chairmanship as Antigua and Barbuda, we advocated for some really key positions and worked with the UK COP presidency at COP26. So from all of that experience, I think what really interested me in shifting into the corporate space is that this experience now needs to be brought to companies. That's where we're going to see both the solutions being driven and the awareness. We have enough regulations that are now really kind of encouraging companies to do it, enough stakeholders care. So it's more of a question of how. And moving from the way I had worked in public policy with a very manual kind of Excel-based, time-consuming approach, Terrascope really fascinated me to be able to, I mean, my day-to-day with Terrascope is working with data scientists, with engineers that are building the product, with the product team itself, and at this intersection of the global climate science, the kind of national legislation and trends, and ultimately a product that will help companies really translate these trends into their operations. And I think the Terrascope being headquartered in Singapore, looking a lot at emerging markets, this is where the future of emissions is going to come from. This is where a lot of the goods and services consumed in, for example, the UK, EU, actually originate. And so really being able to take that experience of decarbonization to emerging markets and help companies make smart decisions was my motivation for joining Terrascope.
That's an absolutely fantastic note to end the interview on. And I just want to say again, thank you so much for joining us today.